Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hi, this is the United States of Anxiety, and I'm Kai Wright. We launched this series way back in the summer of 2016 while trying to understand what felt like an unprecedented upheaval in American politics. That chaos is, of course, the new normal now, and we're thinking a lot about how to keep using this space to make sense of it all. More to come on that front. But one thing we know we want to do is more investigative reporting. And to that end, we've got a story we really want to share with you now. Whatever else is true about this president, he's certainly not afraid of a legal fight. He brags about how often he's been sued and won, but for all his legal battles, the Trump family has only faced a criminal case one time, at least that we know of. Our colleagues in the newsroom have been trying to reconstruct what happened in that probe and how the Trumps got out of being charged. It's an illuminating tale as we all watch Bob Mueller's investigation of the Trump campaign unfold. Our story was reported in partnership with ProPublica and The New Yorker. Here's WNYC reporters Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz.
In the early summer of 2008, Donald J. Trump's adult children, Don Jr., Ivanka, and Eric, called a press conference for the foreign press at Trump Tower to discuss what they saw as a hot property, the Trump Soho. Dominic Rush was there. He was a reporter with The Times of London then.
It was 2008, but I still quite clearly remember thinking, wow, this is the next dynasty of the Trumps.
And they were selling their new project, a 43-story hybrid hotel condo downtown. It was to be a triumphant return to Manhattan real estate for the Trump family.
The building had already been controversial. There was community opposition to a high-rise in a low-rise neighborhood.
There was a hideous construction death and a paved-over abolitionist church.
There was the business associate who'd once been convicted of assaulting a man with a margarita glass, and also of a $40 million pump-and-dump stock scheme.
But on that day, in June 2008, everyone was bullish.
Yeah, everyone was very excited about it. All the usual Trump superlatives, like the biggest, the best, his and hers, Turkish baths.
Ivanka told the reporters the building was 60% sold.
She said, "We are in a very fortunate position where we have enough sales, and now we are strategically targeting certain buyers."
That, prosecutors came to believe, was a lie. And it might even have been a crime. The Trump's public statements triggered a 2-year investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney. There were subpoenas and email evidence. Prosecutors considered charges of larceny and fraud. They zeroed in on Ivanka and Don Jr. To defend themselves, the Trumps pulled out all the stops. And then the investigation was dropped. The evidence was sealed. It remains under seal. WNYC, ProPublica, and The New Yorker have pieced together what happened, speaking with 20 people with knowledge of this case.
Donald Trump and his businesses have been in court a lot, over 4,000 times, according to USA Today. The Trump Taj Mahal was fined $10 million for money laundering. But it's always civil court. Neither Donald Trump nor his children have ever been charged with a crime.
That's important, because this time, they came close.
Trump Soho launches in the spring of 2006.
And now, America's boss, Donald Trump.
On the season finale of The Apprentice.
Located in the center of Manhattan's chic artist enclave, the Trump International Hotel and Tower in Soho is the site of my latest development.
Ivanka and Donald Jr. have just signed papers forming a company called Donka Soho Member. Donka, for Don Jr. plus Ivanka. Donka becomes part of the Trump Soho corporate structure. The Trump children are taking a bigger role on The Apprentice.
My daughter Ivanka, she'll be working with me.
Here's Ivanka, just 25 years old and 2 years out of the Wharton School at UPenn, poised to take over a major Manhattan building project. For a while, things look good. She's profiled by Nightline.
Welcome to Trump Soho.
Ivanka Trump has replaced her high heels with construction boots.
But she's still glamorous. Ivanka promotes the Trump Soho in a magazine ad, wearing a low-cut white dress. The tagline, possess your own Soho. She appears in a video for potential buyers.
Never before us had there been a building that fit aesthetically within the downtown environment, yet had the standard of operations one would expect when they're on the Upper East Side.
But if this was going to be Ivanka and Don Jr.'s coming out, they could not have picked a worse time.
The housing crisis is here.
Bear Stearns today leading the
tumble. Mortgage meltdown.
The worst day of trading in nearly...
With all this going on, the Trump Soho enlists a team of real estate brokers. One of them, Rudy Sieber, is dispatched around the globe to chase potential high net worth buyers to Russia, Venezuela, Colombia, and Italy.
Did you find it hard to sell?
Yes, very, very much so.
He did find some takers, but Sieber says there were so many reasons not to buy in the Soho. To get around zoning restrictions, they made the building a condo/hotel. That means owners could only be there 4 months out of the year. It was also too expensive. The rooms were small. There were big management fees. The units didn't have real kitchens. It wasn't even really in Soho, more like Soho West, near the Holland Tunnel. One question preoccupied those Russians and Venezuelans who were thinking of buying.
Every client is always going to ask, how well has the building sold? Why? Because they want to have the certainty or reassurance that they're going to get into something that other people have obviously done as well, that they're not the only ones that are dumb enough to want to buy.
This is where the number of units sold gets really important, and it's where the Trumps start running into trouble. By law, in order to close any deals at all, they need to sign contracts for 15% of the building or return the money to the buyers. It's a New York consumer protection law. In public, the Trumps are bullish. First, it's 31% sold. Don Jr. says it's 55%. Ivanka says 60%.
But, according to a sworn affidavit, just over 15% of units were in contract.
Not 60%, just over 15%. Right before the deadline to start closing sales, the state gives its approval. The deals can be done.
Thank you all for coming here tonight.
It's the spring of 2010. There's a ribbon-cutting party at the Trump Soho. Don Jr. takes the mic.
I really would probably rather let the product speak for itself and let you see that what we've been saying for all these years actually is true and has really come to fruition.
Just a few months after this party, the legal problems start. A group of condo buyers sues in federal court, claiming a consistent pattern of outright lies. Someone in the Manhattan DA's office sees a story about it in the paper, and they open an investigation. They issue some subpoenas, they get some emails back. This is what one person who read the email said. Quote, I was shocked by the words Ivanka used.
We didn't get to see these emails, but we spoke to seven people who did.
There was one email in which the younger generation of Trumps are discussing how to get their stories straight about the inflated numbers. In another, a person who saw the email said they worry about a reporter who's on to them.
In another email we were told about, Don Jr. tells a concerned broker not to worry about the misstatements because only people on the email chain or in the Trump organization knew the numbers were wrong.
The prosecutors examine these emails and find what could be evidence of fraud and larceny. Because the Trumps, by saying the building was selling briskly, were in effect saying the units were more valuable than they really were. We tried to get a comment from Ivanka and Don Jr. for this story. They referred us to the lawyer for the Trump Organization, Alan Garten. He didn't answer most of our questions or address the criminal case. Instead, he called the civil lawsuit a simple case of buyer's remorse from plaintiffs who bought right before the Great Recession.
Some legal experts aren't so sure.
Certainly lying in real estate hurts everyone.
Ira Goldenberg is a law professor and the former co-chair of the Condominium and Co-ops Committee of the New York State Bar Association.
Fraud, I think, is very bad because it undermines our system of doing business.
Up next, why the prosecution didn't bring charges.
WNYC Studios is supported by Rocket Money. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/WNYC. That's rocketmoney.com/WNYC.
What if millions of Black Americans had been compensated for slavery? Join me, Tremaine Lee, as I explore the untold story of one of the only Black Americans who ever was. I talk to his descendants and discuss how reparations forever changed their family's trajectory and imagine a reality where reparations are paid to the rest of Black America. Into America presents Uncounted Millions, The Power of Reparations, a Black History Month series. New episodes drop Thursdays. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the fall of 2011. The Trumps are facing not only a civil suit, but also a criminal probe into the marketing of their marquee project, the Trump Soho. The Trumps go all out to make this criminal case go away. First, they settled the civil suit. Though Donald Trump used to brag he never settled lawsuits, the buyers get 90 cents on the dollar. But the Trumps get something too, something they think will help them. They get the buyers to say they will refuse to cooperate with prosecutors. And they add a zinger. The buyer's own lawyer sends a letter to the DA's office saying he does not believe a crime had been committed.
But the criminal case does not go away. The Trump Soho has a team of well-known white-collar criminal defense lawyers. Paul Grand is one of them. He's been defending banks and big corporate clients for decades. Grand is the former law partner of Manhattan District Attorney Cy Vance, and also the son-in-law of the former DA, Robert Morgenthau, whose office was made famous on Law and Order. Paul Grand is not the kind of person who likes to go on tape, but he did speak to our reporting partner, Jesse Isinger, with ProPublica. Grand told Jesse the DA's case didn't add up.
He thought that there had been what's called puffery.
Grand and the other defense lawyers said, sure, maybe the Trumps exaggerated. Everyone exaggerates in real estate. You want to make this a criminal case?
The key thing that he was emphasizing is normally real estate fraud involves what he said is a hole in the ground, you know, selling swamp land.
The defense team makes this case to the line prosecutor, but he doesn't budge. So then they go to his boss and then that person's boss until they get to this guy.
Adam Kaufman. I was in charge of all white collar, money laundering, corruption investigations.
So I asked Kaufman, who's now in private practice, when the case got to him, did he believe in it?
Yes, I believed in the case, but believing in the case doesn't mean that we had reached a point where when the defense team came in to see me, I hadn't, in my mind, settled on what should happen with the case.
Kaufman would not talk about the evidence, but he said there was a discussion in the DA's office. On the one hand, they had evidence. On the other hand, the victims were no longer helping them, and also white-collar crimes are hard to prove in court. But they do not drop the case.
In 2012, in the penthouse at Trump Tower, Donald Trump is, you know, frustrated. He just can't get rid of the criminal case. He surfaces a new attorney.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Mark Kasowitz, President Trump's personal lawyer.
Kasowitz had recently made a $25,000 contribution to the Manhattan District Attorney, Cy Vance. He'd never given to Vance before, but he instantly became one of his top donors. That was in January 2012.
In May, Kasowitz, who is not a criminal lawyer, jumps into the Trump criminal case. He decides what he needs to do is leapfrog all the lawyers involved and talk directly to the man on top, DA Cy Vance. Kaufman, Vance's direct report, says it was not unusual.
You know, okay, I thought it was a little premature because I was still sort of evaluating and going through things.
As for Cy Vance, following his own policy, he returns Kasowitz's $25,000 check before Mark Kasowitz is shown into the DA's office in Lower Manhattan.
I think it was relatively brief. I think it was perhaps 20 minutes to a half hour.
ProPublica's Jesse Isinger and I interviewed Vance sitting around a large wooden table in his office.
I think my recollection is Mark came in, sat exactly where you're seated next to, and his partner or associate was to his left. I was seated where Jesse is, and Adam was, you know, right there.
He means Adam Kaufman. The prosecutors who'd been working the investigation weren't in the room. The regular defense lawyers weren't there either. Vance says Kasowitz's pitch was really no different from what the other defense lawyers were saying. It wasn't really a crime. The victims hadn't really lost anything. It would be a tough case. They did not talk about the campaign donation or anything else.
Did he indicate, like, do you really want to do this? Go up against the Trumps?
No. Mark never said that, and I don't think ever would say that.
Was it in your mind?
No, as DA, it's not uncommon for us to deal with individuals who are subjects of investigations that are financially prominent.
After the meeting, there were more discussions inside the DA's office, weighing the pros and cons of this unusual case.
I know Adam had felt more bullish on the case, but I had always talked with Adam and my general counsel about, you know, my concerns as someone who had been a defense practitioner for 20 plus years about whether this was the appropriate use of our resources.
On August 1st, Mark Kasowitz offered a settlement. He said the Trumps would admit no wrongdoing, but they would agree to market the Trump Soho truthfully, even have an independent monitor inside the Trump organization to make sure they did so. But Vance says he decided that was a matter for the civil courts, not the DA.
At the end of the day, I have to look at all the evidence and weigh all the factors as the lead of the office, and my name's on the indictment as to whether or not I feel this should be prosecuted as a crime. Not every lie is a crime.
2 days later, on Friday, August 3rd, 2012, Vance closed the case.
There's more. Just 1 month after the case is dropped in September 2012, Kasowitz sends an email to Vance's reelection campaign, telling them he wants to get back on schedule for a fundraising event. Over the next year, Kasowitz gives another $32,000 and holds two fundraisers for Vance. Because the Trump case has been closed, there is no prohibition on accepting these contributions.
Mark Kasowitz had no influence, and his contributions had no influence whatsoever on my decision-making in the case. And contributions by any lawyer have never, in my time as district attorney, influenced, you know, my decision-making on the merits.
When we interviewed him, Vance said he would give the $32,000 back. Kasowitz sent us a statement. It says, "I donated to Cy Vance's campaign because I was and remain extremely impressed by him as a person of impeccable integrity, as a brilliant lawyer, and as a public servant with creative ideas and tremendous ability." Kasowitz said, "I have never made a contribution to anyone's campaign, including Cy Vance's, as a quid pro quo for anything."
Paul Grand, he's the experienced white-collar criminal defense lawyer who was working on the case before Kasowitz arrived. He told our reporting partner, Jesse Isinger, from his perspective, the right thing happened for the wrong reason.
He said to me, "It didn't have an air you'd like."
Kasowitz came out of the blue, Grand told Jesse.
Then he said to me something that really struck me. He said, "If you or I were the district attorney and you knew that the subject of an investigation was represented by two or three well-thought-of lawyers in town, and all of a sudden someone who was a contributor to your campaign showed up on your doorstep and the regular lawyers are nowhere to be seen, you'd think about how you'd want to proceed." That's what Grant told me.
There's a coda. In early 2016, as Trump was taking off in the Republican primaries, Kasowitz was heard boasting that he'd gotten a criminal case against Don Jr. and Ivanka killed, a case that would have been, quote, "very dangerous to the Trump family and the business." Kasowitz denies that ever happened. You know what happened next.
"I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that Ivanka Trump is now a senior White House advisor. Don Jr. is running the family business with his younger brother. Cy Vance faces re-election in November, but has no opponents. Mark Kasowitz was briefly lead attorney for the Trump defense on the Russia investigation, but has since stepped back.
To date, only 128 of the 391 units in Trump Soho have been sold. That's just over 30%. I'm Ilya Marritz.
And I'm Andrea Bernstein, WNYC News.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
United States of Anxiety is a production of the narrative unit of WNYC News and WNYC Studios. This story was reported by a lot of people. Andrew Bernstein and Ilya Meritz from WNYC, with Jesse Isinger and Justin Elliott of ProPublica, and even with some help from Columbia University's School of Journalism. Bill Moss mixed this episode, and Casey Means is our technical director. Our digital team is Lee Hill, Diane Genty, and Jennifer Hsu. Jim Schachter is Vice President of News for WNYC. Karen Frillman is our editor and executive producer. And I'm Kai Wright. Thanks for listening.
Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.